Are you ready to make the most of your oil and gas mineral rights? Welcome to the Mineral Rights Podcast. Get the knowledge and resources you need to manage your minerals and royalties. Here is your host, Matt Sands.
Hello and welcome to the Mineral Rights Podcast. I'm your host, Matt Sands, and I'm here to help you make the most of your mineral rights and royalties. And my co-host, Justin Williams, joins me as well. Hey, Justin.
Good morning, Matt.
So what we're going to talk about today is if you're thinking about investing in minerals and royalties, you know, you're in a situation where you have some money that you're looking to diversify into other assets, minerals and royalties and oil and gas in particular is piquing your interest because of high oil prices. I know I have a couple of clients who are investors that describes their motivation for learning about this. So what we wanted to do today is talk about if you're getting started with investing in mineral rights and royalties or want to learn more about it, how do you think about the structures? What are the different investment types and options, the strategies you can employ, and the ongoing management process? And so we're not going to talk about the step-by-step process for directly purchasing minerals and royalties. We already covered that in a previous episode. In fact, we have three episodes that really kind of talk about investing. That's episode 26, which is investing in mineral rights and royalties, which kind of gives a high-level overview of the different ways you can invest. Episode 126, which is where we did that deep dive on the direct investment in mineral rights and royalties and working interest. And that's where you go out and call people, employ that what they call the ground game to actually go out and find and close deals. So I talk about this process that I've used and sort of the step-by-step aspect. Then we have kind of a case study. We interviewed Jarrett Kitch, who's an investor with a group of people. So he has sort of like a consortium that they invest together. And he talked about in that episode 128 about managing and investing in minerals and royalties. So the whole process from when you find deals, you know, real small ones. So you think about minerals and royalties, it doesn't have to be these multi-million dollar acquisitions. It can be, you know, a couple thousand dollars. It just depends on the size of the interest, right? So we talk about that with Jarrett. And so we have a little bit of background information. If you haven't listened to those episodes, definitely go back and listen to that. But today we're going to get into the more sophisticated aspects around investing in minerals and royalties. And again, if you're in like a family office situation, you're a high net worth individual, you're looking at wanting to diversify with oil and gas exposure, we talk about some of the things to think about. Now, before we dive in, obviously we're sharing this information for educational purposes only. This shouldn't be construed as legal investment or tax advice. Oil and gas investments are risky. You need to be knowing what you're getting into. It's not for everybody. But so that said, we've got the disclaimer out of the way, Justin. For somebody who doesn't have a lot of experience in oil and gas, and I can imagine there's a lot of questions they might have, and I know that you have had to go through that process of learning about oil and gas, you know, not having an oil and gas background yourself. You want to talk a little bit about your experience about learning how to manage your family's minerals and royalties, and what were the biggest things you had to learn about?
You know, I think the biggest assumption, and I certainly fell into this trap, and I think a lot of people do, there's this assumption that minerals are something that the checks just come in. You know, you just kind of sit back, you let the checks roll in. And I've certainly found in my scenario, that's absolutely not the case. You know, I'm actively going out and identifying where these properties are at, looking at records and seeing if there's active production, if there's new wells. It's certainly something where it takes some legwork on the part of the owner to ensure that the oil companies are doing what they need to do. And a lot of times, Matt, we've talked about this. It's not that they're trying to be dirty or shady. It's just that they've got a lot of information that they're working with hundreds of owners, and the onus is on the owner to be sure that you're being paid properly.
Yeah, that's a great point. I think that, you know, if you're thinking about getting to this, you have the term mailbox money, which is a little bit of a misnomer because it does require active management to make the most of this investment. A lot of times it is relatively passive investment. It's relatively hands-off, but there are times where you need to be pretty actively involved. And then also you need to be proactive in like what you said, Justin, and especially if you have undeveloped acreage, you know, are there wells permitted on your acreage? Have they drilled a well? Is there a producing well that maybe they didn't let you know about and you should be getting paid on it? So you need to go out and proactively reach out to the operator to notify them and send them the title documents and get all that squared away. So it is something in order to stay on top of it, make the most of that investment, you need to be on top of things. Now, one of the things I wanted to talk about, because I've gotten some specific questions from different clients that I've helped invest in minerals and royalties, whether that's directly investing and going out and identifying evaluating and purchasing properties directly from an individual owner, or investing as a limited partner in a mineral fund. And so having somebody else that's the general partner go out and do all that legwork, but then you sort of benefit from that as a limited partner in that deal. Now, the thing that I think most people are wondering is sort of, what do those look like? Now, Justin, do you want to talk and kind of set this up as far as, what are the things to think about here?
Absolutely. And, you know, when you think about real estate, you know, you hear a lot of talk about return on investment. When am I going to break even? And oil and gas is an investment just like any other. And every investment's unique. The actual returns depend on a lot of factors, which several of those can be out of your control. But for example, the returns of the oil and gas depend on how much you pay for the interest. Is that interest fully developed? Where you're receiving royalties now? Are you going to receive royalties when the wells start producing? What are commodity prices like? And then, is it undeveloped acreage? And when will a well get drilled if it is undeveloped acreage? So Matt, there's a lot of factors that go into it. And when you're helping a client to look at a potential property, this is all part of the evaluation. I mean, all of this goes together to create, what is that property worth, and when might you start seeing some returns on that? Do you want to talk a little bit about those fine details, and we'll start spitting out some numbers here?
Sure thing. Yeah. And just like you said, Justin, I think the key thing to remember here is that each property is unique. And, you know, this is not, you know, like, just because you're going to buy, let's say, producing interest, this is the return I'm going to get. Well, obviously, it depends on how much you paid for it. You could never get your money back if you overpay for something and commodity prices fall, for example, based on what you underwrote the deal at. It's a very possible scenario that you never make that money back. So all that said, just to give you a feel for some specific examples that I've evaluated in my professional career for clients. And, you know, these are just kind of generic examples. But one example is, if you're buying producing minerals, you know, in one of these shale basins where they're drilling multiple horizontal wells per drilling spacing unit. This particular example, horizontal wells were drilled 2 years before the interests were purchased and it was fully developed. So there's no undeveloped acreage. If you bought the interest based on an NPV at a 10% discount rate based on the factors that we knew at the time and the commodity price assumptions, and what actually ended up playing out was the yield was around 20% the first year and declining down to, say, about a 6% in year 10. And that 10-year IRR, that internal rate of return, was between 4 and 5%. So this is a specific example where the wells were drilled 2 years before they purchased the interest and it's fully developed. So if you assume you were paying a net present value, in other words, the lump sum purchase price before any fees such as running title, legal fees, stuff like that, just the base purchase price to the owner based on a 10% discount rate. So the thing to think about with producing minerals is, this is sort of something where you're looking at chasing yield. You're looking at, I'm making an investment, I want to get a relatively consistent yield on that investment. And so it's a lower risk because the wells have already been drilled. You're not dependent on the timing of when a rig shows up to drill those wells. The biggest question is, you know, what are commodity prices going to do in the future? And so that's where you have to be conservative in your underwriting, sort of take into account the fact that prices go up and down. You know, oil markets are very volatile. So that's something to keep in mind. But that's kind of one class of investment, you know, producing developed property. Now, the other scenario is, if you have non-producing minerals, and in this particular case study that I'm going to talk about is a property that had, at the time when this was evaluation was done, it had pending drilling permits for 16 horizontal wells. The original assumption when we ran economics was that these 16 wells would get drilled, and, you know, right around the end of when those permits would expire, and that was 2022. What actually ended up happening was that 7 wells were drilled in mid-2022. So the timing was right, but the number of wells was much lower than what was originally assumed. Now, if you had been able to purchase the interest based on an NPV at a 45% discount rate, based on that 16 wells were getting drilled, or if you had said, well, yeah, just because 16 wells are permitted doesn't mean that actually all of them are going to get drilled. Let's say I want to assume that 7 or 8 of those are going to get drilled, and I'm willing to pay up to an NPV at 30%. You would have waited 4 years before starting to receive royalties. But even with the fewer wells and the conservative underwriting, if you had been very conservative, you would have broken even with, like I said, NPV at 45% based on 16 wells, or an NPV 30% for the 7 wells. it would break even around year five. Again, you bought it 4 years before the wells got drilled, assuming that, and you know, they start producing, you break even, and you know, within a year and a half or so of when those wells got drilled. In the yield situation, in that case, you would have about an 80% yield in that year four, in that first year of those new wells started producing, down to about 8% by year 10. Again, this is assuming you purchased it at year zero. So again, with that 10-year average yield around 21% and a 10-year IRR of almost 16%. So the moral of the story here, the numbers aren't really important. I'm just trying to illustrate sort of the different return potentials of these types of properties. The moral of the story, though, is the undeveloped properties, they're higher risk, but higher reward. Timing is everything. And the biggest lever to value on minerals and royalties, especially if they're undeveloped acreage, is the timing for when a new well gets drilled. That's the biggest factor in determining how much you actually make on that investment. And again, you have to be careful and not just assume that whatever is permitted gets drilled. You have to look at, do your due diligence, understand what other operators are doing, what are the trends in terms of well spacing, you know, and things like that. Because a lot of times operators will just permit the heck out of an area, but then they actually only go and end up drilling, you know, half or two thirds of the number of wells that were permitted, just because they determined that the maximum value they're going to get out of that is by a little bit wider spaced out wells. So I think that's an important thing to keep in mind. And so you are not in the control of your own destiny of when those wells get drilled. And so the way that you factor that in when you're doing a deterministic kind of economic analysis like this is you use a higher discount rate to factor in the uncertainty around when those wells might get drilled, you know, the timing, as well as the well performance uncertainty. So you're basing it on, you know, half the wells are going to do better, half of them are going to do worse. And so if you're careful in your underwriting criteria, then something where you can make a good return on your investment. If you're not careful, then you could, you know, spend more than you'd ever get back from that property. So that's something to, you know, keep in mind, is you have to kind of know what you're doing. And if you're not in the industry, then it's, you know, not something where you have to say, well, now I just can't invest. It's something where you just need to have a trusted advisor to help you with the process, have people in every aspect of the process that can help you navigate those technical details. So you can sort of project manage the overall process, but then have specific experts that do each of the steps. And obviously determine the type of deal that's best fit for you depends on your risk tolerance, how that deal fits into your overall portfolio of other investments, both in oil and gas and other traditional investments like equities, commodities, or real estate. So if you're looking at, well, I have very boring portfolio, a bunch of annuities, I want to get something that has a little bit more exposure to some upside. Well, then maybe you're looking at, you know, non-producing minerals versus, you know, hey, I've got a lot of other risky tech startup type stuff. I want to get into something that's just going to pay a pretty steady return. And then you might be looking at producing minerals. So again, it just depends on each individual person's situation. And again, it shouldn't be something where you think you have to go do this. It's not for everybody. You have to have money you'd be willing to lose, basically. That's kind of the way I look at it.
Absolutely. And, you know, Matt, with all investing, you hear about strategies and you're the hold and hope person, you're a day trader. In the mineral rights world, when it comes to strategies, what is the thought process for the different avenues where you're exploring deals and what might be those drivers to do that?
Yeah. So what I alluded to earlier, there's a couple different strategies. There's the chasing the yield strategy, which is where the thing you need to think about is, what is your strategy for this type of investment? And that will determine the types of properties you potentially look at. Again, if you're simply wanting to focus on yield, then buying fully developed acreage with producing wells might be the focus. Then you're looking at your cash on cash yield is really determined by how much you purchase the asset for relative to that royalty income stream and future commodity prices. And again, that's where it's important to conservatively underwrite these so that you're not, you know, for example, if it's a gas property, you're not underwriting it at $7 per million BTU gas price. You, maybe you're looking at it and saying, well, gas prices are high now. Maybe I can factor in high-ish gas prices for a year, but then I think it's going to go back to the historic mean and I'm going to factor in lower gas prices going forward. So these types of mineral properties that provide immediate cash flow through royalty income from producing oil and gas wells, those are colloquially referred to as PDP interest, and that refers to the reserves category of proved developed producing, or PDP. So you're buying an interest in producing wells. These PDP properties derive the majority of their value from existing wells and may have limited upside potential from drilling additional wells. So Justin, do you want to talk about the other side of things, you know, the capital appreciation, the significant upside? You want to talk about the things to think about there?
Yeah, absolutely. So with the strategy equation, properties can provide significant potential for capital appreciation, as Matt alluded to. And this might be mineral rights that are largely undeveloped and in an area of significant oil and gas activity. The term buying ahead of the drill bit, which we've talked about in previous shows, describes what this really means. And you know, considerations with looking at it from this strategy, the time value of money, when will those wells be drilled, are the biggest lever on the value of that acreage, the quality of the operator. Can they and will they actually execute? Just because they have permits, again, as Matt said, doesn't necessarily mean they're going to drill. Underwriting criteria, again, goes with the theme of just don't overpay. You don't want to underwrite investments at $100 in oil and $8 a BTU for gas if you know that those prices are going to go back down. And so, as Matt said, you want to underwrite those prices with what they could be going to, certainly not an all-time high. With both types of properties, you're considering their royalty rate. That'll dictate your decimal interest in the wells and how much you'll receive in those royalty payments. And then again, you want to be conservative on the timing of when those wells will be drilled. In other words, when future wells might get drilled, if you underrate properties based on wells getting drilled in the next year and they don't, then you just overpaid for that property.
Yeah, that's a great point. And so a lot of oil and gas investors will diversify across different types of properties just because of that reason, and across different geographical locations. So ways that you can diversify, obviously oil versus gas properties, you know, oil prices may fall, but then gas prices may stay elevated. So that kind of hedges that at least one commodity price dropping. So some investors will mix between different properties having higher oil concentration versus higher natural gas concentration. Again, different basins or plays, different geographic locations. Some investors like places that are maybe not as hot or maybe getting overlooked because they're not having to pay as much. But then there's maybe more risk that they're taking on from a political standpoint. If you're looking at properties in, let's say, Colorado or California with a lot of political risk, well, that's something you might factor into. And maybe you don't want to have all your eggs in a basket and say in California and they banned oil and gas, and then you're sort of stuck. So you want to maybe have some stuff in Texas and Oklahoma to offset that, right? So it's things like that, as well as what we've talked about already, the producing versus non-producing acreage, the different risk profiles associated with those. You can kind of balance it out by mixing it up. And then finally, we've been talking about minerals and royalty interest, but the same applies to non-operated working interest. And so there's some tax benefits, at least right now, as far as investing in non-operated working interest, especially if they drill a well, you get intangible drilling costs you can expense in the year that occurred. And so there can be some tax benefits to that. And obviously, you need to get with your CPA to find out, you know, what they recommend for your specific situation. But those are some of the considerations that I know that others have looked at when they're investing is, you know, maybe I have some non-operated working interest for the tax benefits. I have some mineral and royalty interest. Maybe I have a mix of undeveloped minerals too, just to have that upside potential. The other thing you got to think about too is sort of what's your time horizon? You know, how long are you going to hold on to these? Is this going to be, you know, sort of a generational wealth type of a situation where you're going to hand these down multiple generations and build a nice portfolio of oil and gas properties? Or are you looking at kind of selectively exiting out of some of these positions if the price goes up and they get fully developed, and maybe you hold on to it for a couple of years after a well gets drilled and get the peak production, and then you sell it while it's still getting good royalties and high commodity prices? You know, you might as well capitalize on that. So I know that there's a range of extremes from investors that say, I will never sell, you know, we're holding on to these forever, and that's the thing we're going to tell our kids and grandkids, to never sell, into, you know, others that invest and they start to get into the almost mineral broker territory of buying and flipping to somebody else. So obviously there's a range and a spectrum there, and you just have to think about what you're most comfortable with. But that's something to think about as well as you're thinking about the strategy. And just to summarize here, we have, what's the return profile look like, you know, from a yield perspective and producing properties, or are you looking at chasing that capital appreciation, buying undeveloped minerals, leasing them, getting the lease bonus, then getting an operator to drill, and then getting the benefit of that, getting that maximum upside versus, and then spreading that out, and what's your diversification and time horizon strategy as well. So now, Justin, Let's talk a little bit about how these deals can be structured. We've talked about this in the past in these other episodes, but let's do a deep dive on sort of the more strategic thoughts around the different ways you can invest here. You want to talk about direct investing?
Absolutely, yeah. And so, like Matt mentioned, there are several different ways that you can go about getting involved with investing in oil and gas, and there's no right or wrong, and some are better for others depending on your situation. With the direct investing, it's certainly the most labor intensive. It requires the most amount of knowledge and use of outside help for oil and gas experience. And as Matt said early in the show, this is called the ground game. And that's identifying those mineral holders, calling them, emailing them to find out if they're interested in selling, evaluating their interest, and then making an offer. There's also the due diligence side of things and then closing the deal. And you have full control of what you're buying in this way and the offers that you're making. You control G&A expenses, and it requires building a network of experts in terms of a landman, oil and gas attorney, engineer, and consultants to run the economics. And on the management side, you may be looking at a mineral manager. And so, Matt, that is in the oil and gas game, or I think for mineral owners that are selling their interest or receiving offers, that's a lot of time who these people are coming from. They're playing the ground game and you're receiving those offers kind of as a bait to get you on the phone.
Yeah, those are the people that either have a team of landmen in-house, or maybe they're outsourcing that, or they're comfortable calling people. And so they just, you know, start making calls, right? So it's a numbers game. The more people you contact, the more deals that will come your way. Now, the other side of things is if you don't want to have to go through that process and figure all of that out, you can invest directly in a mineral fund as a limited partner. So most mineral funds are set up as a partnership, and it's more hands-off than direct investing. You have the general partner that does the legwork of locating and buying the interests, managing them, et cetera. And in return, they get a management fee and then a lot of times a carried interest. So either way, you need to think about what's your strategy. If this is something you're wanting to get into, what are the types of properties, the mix of properties, the locations, and things like that. And then if you're not going out and directly investing, you know, and you're trying to find a fund, you want to match that fund strategy with your individual investment strategy. So that might be in terms of geographic location, the basin or play, the types of interest. You know, do you want it all PDP, or do you want a mix of PDP, a PUD, which is the proved undeveloped. Maybe that's like, you know, buying ahead of the drill bit. You have permits on some stuff that looks like it's going to get drilled. Then maybe you have some just pure undeveloped stuff that isn't even leased. And so you have a mix of that risk profile. And again, you can have a mix of minerals versus non-operated working interest as well, gas versus oil. You know, all those strategic elements would go into the consideration of which fund you invest in. And then the other element that you have to think about with investing in a mineral fund is you have to look at the background of the general partner and the principals in that fund. What's their track record? You know, do they have a history of making and returning decent returns to the investors, or beating the promised returns? You know, talk to the other investors and the references to get a feel for their integrity. And are they going to be around? Is this a Ponzi scheme? There's a kind of a interesting case study in that Ponzi scheme scenario. Going around LinkedIn, there was a pretty high profile mineral fund that raised, I think, around $40 million from a network of high net worth individuals and family offices. Well, they were trying to kind of chase returns. They just weren't making good investments, and so they weren't getting the returns. And so they ended up churning through that money, and the investors were left with nothing. And it pretty much, to the credit of the principal in that fund, he actually came out and proactively turned himself into the feds and said, "I defrauded my investors, and you know, I thought we could do it, but we couldn't." So you don't want to get caught in that situation of having them burn through your money and you're left with nothing, and besides legal bills, right? So it's really important, if you're looking at investing in a fund, that you do a lot of due diligence and make sure it's a reputable group. But there are plenty of reputable mineral funds out there that make very good returns for their investors, but you're going to pay for that, right? So they do the work. They know what they're doing. It doesn't come for free. They have at least probably a 2% management fee, and then a lot of times a 20% carried interest earned by the general partner once you have a preferred return for the limited partners. So it may have be an 8% preferred return. Once you get that, then they back into that 20% interest in those assets that they've purchased. So you have to look at the fine print, you know, those legal documents. They'll make your head spin. They're hundreds of pages long. You know, you're going to spend some money having an attorney review them. So all that stuff needs to be thought about. But if you find a really good fund, a really trusted group, and you have a good track record with them, and they have, a lot of times they'll have previous funds where they need to exit out of certain investments that are in their prime. You know, you have, maybe it was an undeveloped acreage that was leased and then wells were drilled and they've been producing a couple of years and they have a lot of life left and the commodity price environment's good. Well, they want to capitalize on that. And then, you know, eventually those original investors in that fund want to exit, right? They want their money back after, you know, 3-5 years. And so they may look to sell those assets out of the original fund. And if you say, well, hey, when you're looking at doing that, I want to get some PDP stuff to put in my portfolio, you could partner with them and it could be a win-win opportunity where you could buy an asset for yield and they get an exit to provide a return to investors and the previous fund. So there's lots of different hybrid options out there, but there's a lot of things that are possibilities if you find the right group.
Absolutely, man. And you know, if investing is your game and oil and gas is not, that may be a good option for you to look into to find those people who really do have that experience and the staff on team to make those decisions. Another one is investing in publicly traded mineral companies. And this is something, Matt, that we don't talk about a whole lot because we're so focused on the other aspects, but there's several out there. And you know, this isn't investment advice on a particular company, but just as an example, Viper, which is Diamondback Energy's mineral subsidiary, and then Texas Pacific Land Corporation is another one. These guys generally have the highest general and administration expenses, and you can end up paying much higher valuations on interest if the stock price runs up, but it's mostly hands-off. You set it, you forget it, as long as the company is doing well. And if you decide to get into direct investing in minerals and royalties, you don't necessarily need to go out and hire an experienced oil and gas team to execute on your strategy. You can outsource the work until you reach a critical mass of acreage, where it may make financial sense to hire an accountant with oil and gas experience, or a landman, land administrator, to help manage that M&A activity and leasing. And so, Matt, there's several different options where you can kind of look at entering the minerals world, and it really depends on your individual scenario and what your goals are.
Yeah, and again, key thing is, you know, who you work with. So if you are looking at directly investing, whether you're looking at directly investing on your own with some help or through a fund, then you know, you have to look at where your geographic area is, because a lot of consultants and groups will focus on a particular basin or play or a region. And so you have to think about where that is first, and then you can go out and start to find, identify those people that are experienced in that area. And so if you think about like consultants in minerals and royalties, they have, you know, a particular area they're focused on, like an oil and gas attorney, they may be licensed to practice in one state, maybe it's Texas. And if you're having minerals that you're looking at in Wyoming, well, obviously they wouldn't be the right person to call because they direct you somewhere else because they don't practice law in that state. So obviously that's a pretty obvious example. But you know, similarly with other consultants and advisors such as landmen or land service companies or engineers, if you're looking at getting valuations or running economics on deals or managing mineral managers, you know, maybe they focus on a particular area as well. If you're in that situation, we had a previous guest that had a mineral management company that focused on the Bakken and the Williston Basin. And so that's where their family had minerals. That's where their expertise was. And that was their area that they helped their clients manage. So you just have to kind of do your due diligence, find people that are in that area, and then, you know, go from there, you know, basically. So I think the thing that is interesting too, Justin, you know, when we first got into minerals and royalties and you're having to look at paper check stubs and writing it on a legal pad or something like that. Now we have computers and spreadsheets, but that can get overwhelming if you have a lot of interests. Now there's some amazing tools. You want to talk a little bit about some of the different things that can help you manage the minerals once you get into that situation?
Yeah, absolutely. And as Matt mentioned, there's a plethora of software is available today from large companies, small companies, and startups that really make the process of managing those minerals easier from an accounting software standpoint to even a leasing or a land management standpoint of keeping track of those royalty payments and ensuring that you're getting paid correctly. So it's easier than ever. A familiar term in the minerals and royalty space is mailbox money, as Matt mentioned, and that term is referring to the passive nature of these types of investments. But in order to get the most out of your investment, it will require at least some active management to make sure that those wells out there on your acreage are getting paid on. You got to make sure that you're staying on top of division orders and that when they're figuring those percentages from the division orders, that it's accurate. You know, that's something that I think mineral owners often take for granted. Oil companies make mistakes. All humans do. And so there is some active management involved in that and something to stay on top of. And Matt, I think sometimes people going into don't realize that there's going to be anything beyond sending that original change of ownership over to the oil company and then just seeing the checks roll in.
Yeah, that's definitely true. So, you know, obviously something to think about. You can outsource that, like we talked about. You can get help with mineral management software, accounting software that'll help automate some of that. There's companies that'll upload your check stubs and send you a report. And so you don't have to be doing this, but it is something you have to do at some point, whether it's you or you have a mineral manager do it for you, and whether you leverage, you know, technology to where you can log in, like you look at your Fidelity portfolio, you can log in and see your balance. Well, you can kind of do the same thing with minerals. You have different software that's accessible, you know, anywhere with a network connection, you can kind of go and check and see what your royalty stream is doing, what your well situation is as far as new wells coming online or being drilled or permitted, things like that. So lots of tools out there. Technology really makes this a lot easier to do remotely from wherever you are. You don't have to be in that same state. You don't have to have access to, you know, the Oil and Gas Commission and go anywhere physically. You know, it's all electronic. So that's a plus. A couple of things to think about too is these types of properties, if you're buying an investment property like an apartment building or a rental property, you have a relatively steady stream of income going into the future. So you may have to spend some money up front to fix it up, and you may have to do periodic maintenance and things like that, you know, as renters move out and you have to clean it up and repaint and replace carpet or whatever it is. But when you go to rent it out, you know, generally rents are going up. You know, they're not depleting, right? They're not decreasing. Now, the thing to think about with oil and gas properties is they're depleting assets. The term that you may hear referred to is a melting ice cube. So that's, you know, your royalty stream is going to be continually getting smaller month over month into the future. Now, obviously, commodity prices can change that to a certain extent, but the volumes that those wells are producing are going to be going down no matter what. Especially in shale basins, you have very high initial production rates, very steep initial declines that flatten out. But ultimately, what you get is the majority of the reserves are produced in the first couple of years of those wells' life. And so if you are investing in oil and gas, and if you're wanting to maintain a certain type of return, you may need to go out and be reinvesting some of that money over time to kind of maintain that. So it's sort of like the analogy to companies need to go out and drill additional wells in order to maintain production flat, which just seems kind of counterintuitive. But that's something to think about with oil and gas, is there is a continual need to reinvest capital in order to maintain cash flow. Unlike, you know, residential real estate or commercial real estate or things like that. So that's something that is unique to oil and gas, in that especially these shale basins, it's a significant drop in royalties. The first few months after a new well gets drilled, you are going to be jumping for joy, but then you'll be looking and the checks keep getting smaller and smaller and smaller. And that may be fine. Maybe that's not a problem, but if you want to maintain a certain level of cash flow from these types of investments, you're going to have to keep reinvesting into it. You can do that smartly and keep generating good returns. Obviously, we're not advocating the mentality that plagued the shale industry, you know, the past decade, where they just chased growing production and growing the business versus looking at, are they making money and are they getting a good return for their investors? So similarly, with your personal investments, obviously, you want to make sure that you're making smart investments and that you're making the right type of investments to make that balanced out to whatever your needs are. So a lot to think about, but it's pretty fun when you think about the strategy and how do you structure these types of investments, the different types of assets, you know, the different vehicles or different ways you can go to investing. And then, you know, how involved you want to get. Is this something you want to learn about and get your hands dirty? Or do you want to outsource it and just kind of monitor it and make sure that things are going well? So a lot to think about, but we wanted to dive in a little bit more into the details for some of the strategic stuff behind these types of investments for people that are thinking about it. Because I know I've had a lot of these questions from some of my clients that I've coached and that I've helped with investing in minerals and royalties, again, depending on whether that was just investing in a mineral fund or investing directly, getting their hands dirty, making phone calls to mineral owners. So a lot to think about, but it's a fun area to be involved in.
Absolutely. And it's very interesting and unique and has its own caveats. But as you said, Matt, it's certainly a viable option, but not for everybody.
Yep. And so on that note, that wraps up this episode. Thanks again for listening. If you could do us a huge favor, leave us a rating and review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you're listening to this. It really helps us out. Until next time, thanks again, Justin.
Thanks, Matt.
Thanks so much for listening to the Mineral Rights Podcast with your host, Matt Sands. Don't forget to subscribe and share at mineralrightspodcast.com. The Mineral Rights Podcast should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy.